Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another edition of the Mundane Festival podcast. I'm your host, Chris Lamberth. Today is Sunday, July 26th, 2020. This is episode 439. I have a super special return guest. You know her, you love her. Comedian, podcaster, writer, budding filmmaker, Sarah Tolomash from the Vag Podcast. She's got a brand new album out called Voluptuous Boy. It debuted at number one on iTunes, and I'm super excited to share my conversation that I had with her with you in a few moments. But right now, I want to talk to you for a few moments. I am sitting on my couch like I normally do, recording this intro, NBA TV on mute. They're showing highlights of the New Jersey Nets, I think. Is this like the Nets? What do they call it? No, it's actually... Yeah, okay, well, it's High Tops, some series called High Tops Jason Kidd's Best Plays. All right, that's pretty new. Most of the weekend, they've been playing replays of the scrimmages and all that good stuff from the NBA restart, which is cool. Glad to have the NBA back and all that good stuff. There's some weird thing going on with my cable right now. Like, everything is normal with the exception of this loading window notification that's in the dead center of the fucking screen. I don't know why it's doing that. I tried cutting the cable box off and it's just still there. It's so funny to me. I just paid Verizon this week. No, last week or a week or two ago. And a couple of nights ago they sent me an email saying, "Your August bill is ready right now, Mr. Lamberth." I'm like, "Oh, is it? Is it? Because I'm not ready. I just paid you guys." As soon as you pay them, they're telling you you owe for the next month. So it goes, I guess, right? Yeah, I got to see what's going on with that. I got to try to restart or reboot this fucking thing without making everything else mess up. I wanted to say, I just really got lost in that, being pissed off at this fucking thing. You pay all this money and then it just, it's just little things just ugh. All right. First off, I wanted to start off by thanking everybody for listening to the show. I really appreciate it. But I wanted to give a special thanks to my Patreon subscribers. I want to take a note from all the people, my colleagues that do this, that actually thank their subscribers. And I think this will be something that I do. Whenever I get a new Patreon subscriber, I will shout them out. But I wanted to shout out everybody that I have, the small but mighty crew of folks that contribute to this show. I'm not going to give your governments out. I'm going to just say your first name. Thank you to Charles, Nick, Keith, Ka, Juan, Maury, Mark, Stefan, Rod, Felt Five, Cedric, Michael, Dre, and Victor. Thank you so much for subscribing to the show, to the Patreon, supporting the show. There's been some that had to drop out because of financial reasons. That's what the exit surveys say, but it's not because the material sucks. It's just, they couldn't stay on. And I totally get it. I understand. But I wanted to send a special thanks. I had Patreon going for about 3 years and you guys literally keep the show afloat. Like, there's been times where I did not feel like doing it. I mentioned it several times on this feed. But it's because of you that the show keeps going and I keep talking to these interesting and talented people and having good conversations that fulfill me. Like, this is one of the weeks. This past week was one where I needed this. I had a conversation scheduled with Sarah on Monday. I was working from home, dealing with stuff, just like, "Oh, I can't believe this shit." Getting really angry about stuff. And a rightful anger that I feel like I should have had. And then I talked to Sarah and then I did feel a lot better because I talked to one of my colleagues, one of my people that have a better understanding of, you know, of what we do in this world, what we try to do. It's not anything that it's like, not saying that it's high art, but I think that by me participating in the arts and the things that I do, that the life that I've chosen, it's how I fit in the world. You know, it's not saying that comedy and acting and show business shit is more important than anything else. It's just how the way my brain's wired, that's how I believe that I fit in this universe, in this world. So I want to thank you all for supporting that, supporting this show. And it really means a lot. So I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart. What else? My car's in the shop. It's going to be a lot of money. It's just like, oh my God. Part of me wishes that, it's cool that they're going to fix it and all that stuff, but it's just like, man, I wish that I would have known about this earlier in the pandemic where I didn't need my car as much. So now that we're going back to work sporadically, we're doing shifts and stuff. It'd be nice. I don't know. I'll figure something out, but it's just like, oh my God. So I'm going to, thankfully I have the funds to pay for it. Cause in a lot of situations it would have been like, I don't know what I'm going to do. So but it's such as life. If you have a vehicle, you know what it's like, you know what it's like to deal with that shit. Other things I'm probably going to, I got some movie reviews that I'm going to do for Patreon this week and some other stuff that you guys will get. What else? Other than all the bullshit, you know how the country's, you know which way the country's going. Hopefully we can fix it to get it back to some kind of decency in November, I hope. What else? I think that's it. Let's just get you to Sarah. You know, like I said, this was my conversation with her that I had had last week was just right on the money. I needed it. I expressed some of that in our conversation, actually. And it was good. It was always good to talk to Sarah. She's super talented. The album's great. I was there for the taping earlier this year. And so I recommend it. If you like stand up, if you like the people that come on this show and you like my reviews and everything that I, you know, if I talk about a movie or album or anything, I think it's really good to support Sarah, support someone that's in the game, working hard and doing her thing. And I reckon that's about it. So without further ado, please enjoy my conversation with the very lovely, talented and delightful Sarah Tolomash. Been on a couple times, a few times. Yeah, well, it's almost time for you to get a green jacket. If you've been on, you've been on the show.
The three time club.
Yeah, totally. The pandemic made me think, oh my God, what am I doing with my life and blah blah blah. But then when I really started to think about it, I was like, no, I did the right thing. I did what I wanted to do, not being a dick about it, but I just, I lived my life in a decent way and I followed my dreams and I feel pretty good about it, you know?
That's good. Yeah, I'm hoping I'll come full circle. It's such a long time that I'm like, maybe we just go in cycles with this. Yeah.
It's just one of those things where it's just like, no, I don't want my ego to be attached to my day job, because I know that some people, if you can look, because we're comics, we analyze stuff and we overthink and we do whatever, you know, our process is, and then you just think about like, man, I'm glad that I have something else other than the way that I earn money for the, you know, to just kind of, I can leave this and go do stand up and I can do a podcast and I can connect with other people.
Yeah, you have an outlet. Yes. It could have just been that and not, not that. I guess that would have been fine. I would have had to find TV shows that I really like.
Yeah.
But it's nice to have a creative outlet for sure.
Oh my God, yeah. It's just like, I just can't believe. Ugh. Okay, enough about me. I'm not going to be my mom and dump all my shit on you. So how have you been? We talked in May when I was on Vag.
Yeah.
How?
God, it feels so long ago now.
I know. It really does. How have you been coping since then? Because it was your birthday.
I did.
I think we recorded on your birthday.
We did. I think we did.
And Joe bought you a hijab, or you already had one?
Oh, I had that t-shirt. It's a t-shirt hijab that I can make, but I haven't worn it since. It's too hot to do anything.
Oh my God, it's so hot now. It is really. I'm doing this without the AC on because it's too. And I looked at my electric bill. I almost wanted to kill myself. It was so.
I think they can prorate it so they can spread it out during your other months that aren't as expensive. Because there's quite a few months where we don't have to run any AC or heat.
Yeah, and I guess I've been home for so long.
Yes,
longer than I'm usually home. So it's just like I said, oh my God. I said, okay, I kind of get this, but they said something like, oh, we're not reading the meters, and so we don't come out and read the meter. I was like, you motherfuckers can just come and look at the thing. You assholes.
It's not that hot.
Yeah. I mean, come on.
But, and they always estimate more that you have to fight it.
Fucking assholes. I just you know, one thing I've noticed that people like, yeah, we can't go, we can't do stand up and we can't do a lot of the things that we like performing and stuff and hang out. But corporate America businesses they don't give a fuck.
No, you can't say I'm not really feeling it today because of what's going on in the world.
they gave us some commercials with some piano music and then they said, fuck you. for after that, they're just like, fuck you, you gotta pay your bill. I just it's crazy. And I just noticed, like, going back to work, I would just the way that people drive on the highway, I felt like I was in like in Fast and the Furious. It's like 6:15 in the morning and there's just a guy just on my ass. I said, dude, you can get in front of me. It's not that serious. And it's like people have gotten back to normal despite things being abnormal.
Oh, yeah. I think I was annoyed about restaurant service the other day.
Oh, really? You went out? You guys went out?
We went out. Well, we went to, I don't want to say what club it was, but we thought it'd be fun to go to an old haunting ground.
Sure.
And then it was like, we were the only ones there and didn't order a lot. And I was like, oh, this is. But, you know, you're, like, just grateful to be out. So, of course, I would never make a stink. But you're, like, my part of you is, like, all right. I mean, I'm going to let things fly. But this is insane that we've had to wait this long to get chicken wings.
Shouldn't you be happy I'm here?
I thought you guys needed business.
There, I was out. I went out Saturday to get takeout. And, there were people, it's like a small town. It's Ridgewood, New Jersey. And it's like one of those quiet little towns. And it was Saturday. I was like, I was doing like a podcast or something. I was like, oh, I'm going to go to my favorite new burrito place. And it was like parking. It was kind of hard to park. And then there were people standing outside of the restaurant and there were kids and they didn't have their masks on. And the kids that did have masks, they were like pulled down. People kind of weren't wearing them, and they made me look like an asshole for wearing one.
Yeah, I've had that a few times where you're like, oh, I guess we're not wearing that. There's times where we're hanging out, we went to see family, and then you're like, well, I don't want to be inside with this many people. But then you're like, I'd rather just get COVID than have people make me feel like shit for wearing a mask.
Yeah. It's crazy. It's
wild. Yeah, it's completely wild.
I try not to go out to do I'll go to the store, the grocery store, and to do my laundry and now work. But I mean, I went to a Best Buy about a month ago and it was pretty chill because everybody had their masks on and it wasn't packed. It wasn't crowded. They were.
Yeah.
And I think they were
a big
about,
space.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think they were about to close. And it seems like most, with the exception of my experience on this past Saturday, it seemed like most everybody was wearing their mask, you know? So.
Yeah, here they are. I remember I went down to Texas early June and I hung out with my mom and then like the town that I grew up in, there was like a few bars that didn't want you to wear your mask because they just didn't want that shit there. You know what I mean? Like that. It was that attitude, and now they're spiking. So
yeah,
I just don't understand that. Where you're like, you see what we went through, and if all you have to do is just wear your mask, and it cuts it down by so much.
Yeah, yeah, and we're gonna get into movies soon in a bit, but I just saw on Twitter where they delayed the new Christopher Nolan movie Tenet indefinitely. So after they kept pushing it back, because it was supposed to come out last week, and it was the summer blockbuster. It was like, I was super excited for it. I guess, you know, Warner Brothers and Christopher Nolan, their egos are so big that they just don't want to put it on VOD, where I think it would clean up if they did. But then I had some other friends say, oh, you know, once you put it out there digitally, that shit is basically free. And I was like, oh, that you kind of have a point.
People, that is a good point.
Yeah.
I actually don't feel, I guess it's the eating part that the theaters want to make money that way.
Yeah.
But like, I'm fine. I never really ordered food when I went to the theater. So
did you sneak it in?
The ceilings are pretty high. Yeah. Every now and then I'll bring my own candy.
Yeah.
It's just too expensive. But, the ceilings are high enough that I was like, if we were all wearing a mask, I actually feel like we would probably be okay. I went on a 6-hour plane flight and I wore a mask
the whole time.
Was in the beginning of June, and I felt fine. And it feels like a lot more people are actually traveling, and I haven't heard any real incidences or concerns, because it sounds like they enforce it and they're not serving food or beverages on the plane.
Okay.
That I haven't heard incidences of people getting it from that way. It just sounds like it's more from inside eating restaurants and maybe like office being enclosed.
Yeah. Yeah. There, when I'm in the office, there are not that many people in there. I have my own side of the office where nobody's there. It's just me. And, you know, if somebody comes over, if you leave your desk, you have to put your mask on. Other than that, like you're just kind of there, and I'm pretty much there the whole time unless I have to go to the bathroom. But I notice like now people like in Jersey, like they'll have people are eating out at the diner and they're outside. They have those little tents. Like if you're getting married and stuff, you go to, you know, all that stuff. So it seems like people are for the most part being pretty safe, but it seems like the red states are the ones that are giving us trouble.
Well, yeah, it's all like the, you don't tell me what to do.
Right.
And you're like, all right, I don't know. We're like, just wear your mask. I think of it as the same way as when people were forced to wear seatbelts. There were a lot of people that didn't want to. I remember as a kid, like people being like, I don't want to wear my seatbelt. But like, that just like slowly disappears, and then everyone wears a seatbelt. It's unfortunate that we, you know, like nowadays, if you don't put your seatbelt on, the car won't start, or it makes an annoying noise that you wish that people would make an annoying noise if they don't wear their mask.
Right. I don't know. That's like a weird kind of Chewbacca, but not as a half ass. I don't know. I mean, I just feel like we'd be back to some form of normalcy if we all just kind of did it.
Yeah, apparently if we all wore a mask, like they said that we could have a handle on this within 6 weeks.
That's insane.
I know. It's just, I don't know. America. It's hard to manage a big group of people.
Yeah, America. Jesus Christ.
I know, it's crazy.
I just keep thinking the pantsuit lady would have been a better choice. I'll never fucking get over it. I'll never get over that shit. I'll never fucking get over it. It just, and I'm not like a political you know what I mean? Like
I think we're similar.
Yeah. It's just, I mean, when I was younger, I guess I don't know. I mean, I was a communications major in undergrad and stuff, and I interned at the State House in Annapolis, Maryland, and I did a couple weeks in high school. But when I was in undergrad, I did a full, I guess you call it, I did a whole semester And I guess like a, I guess you call it a term. See, I don't even remember that shit. It was 20 plus years ago.
Yeah.
But it was just like, it, what was it? 18. Was it? Yeah. 18 years ago. And Jesus Christ, when you can say that.
I know. Oh my God.
And so I was doing that and it was really fun, but I thought that I was maybe going to be in the news or something, but you know, I still believe in some form of it, but it's just now, like, I think people are like, I don't really like that person. Like it's not checking off every single box. Like, it's like if you're dating and you have to have every, she's got to look, the person has to look like this, talk like this, this tall, this, you know, everything. And they have to check off every item on your list. And reality's not like that. And then you just look at it, it's like, you're going to be alone for a long time.
Yeah, this is going to be really hard for you.
Yeah, yeah. So it's just, it's like, you know, oh, I didn't like Hillary. Hillary and Trump are the same.
Yeah, you're like, it's no, they're not. You heard them both speak.
Yeah, it's so crazy. They're, and I don't know, what do you think about this, with the Ghislaine Maxwell?
Yeah, well, that looks crazy.
Yeah. Did you hear about the judge? And
yes.
Yeah.
You can't help but figure that is not a coincidence. Right. Also, to have the guy dress up like a FedEx. I mean, that sounds like some professional shit.
Yeah. Yeah. And they got the guy, or the guy killed himself. I just like logged off my work computer. So I saw kind of like a tweet.
Yeah, I didn't know about that part. I just heard about the judge's husband and son were shot and killed, and then he was on the hunt. They were on the hunt for that guy. But then after that, I've been doing like podcasts and Zoom stuff.
Sure. I was going to try to, let me see if I can find it. Can I say NJ Judge? NJ Judge. I just want to see.
Salas is her name.
Okay.
S-E-L-A-S, I think.
Okay, let's see.
NJ New Jersey.
Dead attorney.
Like, there's no way that she can do that case now, right?
I wouldn't do it.
I know, it just feels like you're personally involved in now because your husband and son are dead, but...
Yeah, okay. I didn't want that. Okay, but I do have... Okay, Judge Esther Salas' son shot and killed, husband injured in attack at their New Jersey home. Suspect found dead. I don't think that's not that far from the stress factory. Critical but stable condition. The suspect has now been identified as Roy Den Hollander, a Manhattan lawyer. Wow, a Manhattan lawyer. And self-described anti-feminist, multiple law enforcement sources briefed on the case told ABC News Hollander's body was discovered in a car by a municipal employee in the town of Rockland, New York, not far from, I don't know if that's true, if that's near Levity. That's so funny, all this stuff is like, it's near the comedy club.
Yeah, that's
how we know shit. He died of, that's bad. Well, no, it's not. That's our life. Fuck it.
That's our life. Yeah.
We didn't kill anybody. We killed crowds, you know?
Yeah.
Hey-o. Oh, Jesus. I'm going to get canceled. He died of an apparently self-inflicted gunshot wound. The sources said New York State Police was on the scene and FBI was going to. That's like some shit that they do in the movies. And obviously they do that shit in real life. That's crazy. Yeah.
That's what it feels like. You're like, you want to see how this plays out. Like, I don't know if Ghislaine will end up having a hit on her head. Yeah. And then you want to know who's behind it.
Yeah. Yeah. She's got to talk like ASAP. She's got to just.
Yeah. If I was her, I would just spill all the beans and get yourself a deal.
Yeah. It's crazy. Because I guess maybe that Netflix documentary put it over the limit. Like, just, is that what it was? Or.
It seems like it, just of like, this is insane that someone that was part of it and involved heavily in it, and because Epstein never went to trial, that you're like, she definitely will have the answers and is fully responsible in facilitating the sex trafficking part.
Right, right. Yeah, it's so, it's insane.
That's wild.
Yeah. And then all the people that were... that were just possibly implicated, people deleting tweets, like Chrissy Teigen deleting tweets.
Wasn't that just for toddlers and tiaras? And yeah. It's just because it kind of read off tasteless rather than, I don't think. I mean, I've been going on TikTok and there's a lot of like conspiracy theories and it gets out of control. Like the, now there are like Tom Hanks, he was on one of the Epstein logs and he likes to photograph random objects found. And one of the objects that he had posted was a pink sock. And apparently that's a huge, like a term in the child pornography or just sex or pornography world. Oh my God. Like you can actually just tie everything to anything if you try hard enough. And then I looked into the Wayfair stuff. Apparently the reason why some of those cabinets are as high as they are is because they are, can withstand high levels of temperature. So if they're in a fire, all the documents that are in there aren't going to get burnt. So that's why it would make it more expensive than your average cabinet.
Wow. Yeah, that's...
But who knows? It could be how you buy young girls online. I don't know.
That's crazy. Like, I just... Some of those rabbit holes... Like, I'll get stuck down a rabbit hole of how to make a tuna melt or...
Yeah.
Or some of my... One of my favorite artists, like, looking at old YouTube sets of theirs or some shit, but...
Yeah,
you can get of, it's crazy, man. It's too much, and it's comics that we know are doing the shit. And it's like, why are you doing that? You used to be, I don't know. Some people, I don't know. I don't want to talk too much, get too into detail. Do you ever see some as a white woman, Sarah?
Yeah.
Do you see some of your white brothers and sisters making like this heel turn into?
Oh, meaning like leaning into the other side of it?
Yeah, it's like it's not all, it's not necessarily alt-right, but it's in the neighborhood.
It is in the neighborhood, yes. I definitely see it. You know what it is? I think a lot of it has to do with like, I'm not getting industry attention and I might as well cater. I already kind of have these views anyway, so I might as well cater to this other demographic that also wants, and I think it feels like a business side of stuff.
Okay, because I'm glad that you've noticed that. Because as one of my white correspondents, I want to make sure because it's I definitely see it, and it's something that comes up in the text threads with my black friends.
Yeah,
I'm saying that like I'm not black, but with my friends who are black. And you know, you're like, is this person, what happened?
I don't know. Where did they go the other side? I mean, some of the stuff that I see people post where I'm like, well, that's so crazy.
Yeah.
That's just like, it's more, I guess I'm like, I'm just giving the benefit of the doubt of that it's always under the disguise of a joke. But a lot of the times I'm like, that's just tasteless.
Yeah, it's so weird, and it's just like, and it's we know who at least one of them are. It's like, it's so funny because it's like you see this. I saw a particular comedian this year at the Gotham Christmas party.
Yeah,
and I was like, oh hey, how you doing? I haven't seen you in a minute. Like, and you just and then he's like, oh, and then you see them tweet. He's like, oh, I'm doing good, blah blah blah. And then that you see them on Twitter, and it's like. Like big fangs are coming out.
Yeah,
and it's just like a weird fucking, it's just, it's so weird. And then you're like, you think like, was I tricked? This person was on my podcast.
I know. I think that all the time. It's really weird when I read tweets from other comics that we get along well. And then I just want to be like, do you hate me? I mean, I feel like, but that's what I've been determining with Twitter is just like it's its own kind of weird world, and I know it's a lot of people's minds and thoughts, but a lot of it is for show, and to gain clicks and the followers, and that I don't really feel like it's a strong representation of how people are treating each other outside in the real world. Like, you know, you go out, I mean, there are pockets where you're just like, well, that's just hateful. And I know that it does happen, but it doesn't feel like it's as in your face as when you're on Twitter all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It seems really intense. And it's just like, that's a weird heel turn. That's a thing. So like the inverse of that being a black comic would be if this podcast, which is just like a chat show, a lower budget WTF, a low budget WTF, and yeah. Monday morning podcast, where I was just like, if I would just change the way this podcast was, and I talk shit about black people and saying, well, black people need to do this, and I started becoming like saying like all this conservative stuff, and I shit on black people, my profile would go up. Because I would be, if I made, you know, like if I...
Yeah, like a Candace Owens.
Exactly.
Like no one would have really known her unless she had done a heel turn.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now she's made a name for herself, where if she went the other route, she wouldn't have made a name for herself. So now she can sell books. She can be the talking piece on a talk show. So yeah, it is really interesting. You see that all the time. Like I, you know, with Ann Coulter, she has built a whole career
mm-hmm.
of saying some very, like, very hurtful stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
I just picture it as like they're all kind of like when rockers of the 70s and 80s embraced Satanism because it gave them more intrigue. You know what I mean? For the stage performance, it was like, well, now parents are like, you can't listen, and it becomes this news source. And then but you're like, I know they don't believe in any of that shit.
Yeah.
It's just for the game of it, for money, and now for clicks, which is money.
Yeah. Yeah. It's insane. It's a different, and I think now that there's been this shift to doing people doing what we do, like podcasting and then like YouTube, it's become a different thing where these people are, it's so funny how like I could put up a stand up clip and think it's so good. And a lot of my peers and a lot of other people would say it's good, and it wouldn't get as nearly as much clicks as like something else that's like, I fucking hate this video game because it's a piece of shit and I fucking hate it. And they get like 55,000 views.
Oh,
it's insane.
It's you have to have like a strong opinion. It's really weird because I've been talking about this a lot of just like sometimes I feel like you can be addicted to rage, and people I think actually like to be enraged.
Yeah.
It's like a feeling that you can build off of, and like then you're counterpointing. Like I sometimes think with YouTube, you know how it's always like, here's some videos that you might like. Sometimes I'm like, they should just do, here's some videos that you'll really hate.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of stuff that people just like hate watch.
Right.
Because they like to get enraged. Like, that's just stupid.
Yeah.
Oh, come on. It's, I don't know. It's like a sport in a weird way.
Right. Right. Yeah. What have you been doing to, cope with just being away from the stage? Like I know you've been doing you've done at least two of those at-home film festivals, right?
Yeah, we're having I believe it's our fourth.
Oh wow,
July
shit.
30th.
Okay.
Yeah, we had our third. We just do it once a month.
Okay. You and Ashley Brooke Roberts, right?
Yes.
Okay.
So we've been doing that, and that's been fun. But yeah. I've slowly been doing some outdoor shows.
How has that been?
Well, the first one I did was the drive-in, and that was just kind of fun for the novelty of it, but it really wasn't like anywhere near being remotely fun.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it was like doing a live Zoom show. So it was fun that everyone was out. You got to see some comics, but then like you see people in their car, you can see them laughing, but you can't hear anything. So you can't really like feed off the laughs, but you just keep going. You just deliver. It's like doing a Zoom show, but outside. And then I've done a park one. And that was fun, but you don't get a mic because they want to be respectful. I think you have to get a permit if you start doing a mic.
Oh.
And then that was good. But the one that I've liked the most so far is at QED, and they have a back patio area.
Okay.
And you get your own mic. And so everyone has a clean mic and everyone's social distanced nicely and it's outside and it had a good group of people. And it felt like that was like the first time I felt like I was actually doing stand up.
Are they paying you for these shows?
Stand Up New York is. I didn't get paid at QED. Some Zoom shows have paid. The Diner one paid. But right, I guess right now I'm in that mindset of like, well, I just don't want to be a complete spaz when things open up again. That at least I'd have, I don't know, a decent amount of material that I would feel comfortable with on stage.
So you're working new bits.
I'm trying, but like, you know, you think that you have them and they're all from, and then you're trying to do it without being so COVID related. Cause I don't, you know, you just worry that that's gonna, everyone's going to have the same bits and then what are you going to bring to the table? And then eventually it kind of like disappears. So I kind of been writing under the umbrella of it. So like, food, just stuff that we've been doing in quarantine.
Yeah.
That we would, you know, you would do outside of quarantine. So just, yeah, a lot of cooking. Since I did a lot of cooking, I have a lot of food bits and then depression stuff, mental wellness things. So I feel like those can all live outside of the COVID as well as be inside the COVID.
Right. Who's the better chef, you or Joe?
I think I am, but only because I like trying out a lot of food. But usually once I find the items that I like, then I usually stick to that for a good year or so before I start venturing off to making other recipes.
I kind of do that too. Like I have my staples of like, not that much in the summertime, but spaghetti.
Yes.
I like salmon. What else? I like shrimp. God, I'm very limited. I can make, like, I just started making chicken wings at home. I've done that a few times. I bought a Dutch oven.
Oh, that's great. That's a game changer. Yeah. I want an air fryer.
That's the new wave now. Everybody's talking about the air fryer now.
Yes. That's the thing is, like, I'm kind of limited in my stuff, so I don't have a Dutch oven, but I do have a deep skillet and a shallow skillet. So I put my chicken in the deep, and then I cover it with the shallow skillet, and that's my Dutch oven.
Oh, yeah, that's good. So what do you do with the chicken? You fry it?
I cook it, render it, I guess is what you call it, and then lay some shallots, dates and some lemon wheels, and then you all cook it with olive oil and salt, and then you kind of like render it in the fat for about 8 to 10 or maybe like 15 minutes, and then you put it in the oven for about 25, and then you put water in it, and then you put it back in for another 25. This is the Allison Roman cookbook.
the lady that got canceled. It's so funny for talking shit about Chrissy Teigen. I found out the we can relate this back, because I found out that John Legend had a fried chicken recipe, and it was on Chrissy Teigen's YouTube channel. Then I found out that she had cooking products, cookware, and I was like, oh shit, I'm gonna get these. But it was from Target. And this was earlier on in the pandemic where I was like, I don't want to go to Target. I would just rather them send it to me.
Yeah.
And they were doing like this weird thing. And then so I just got one from Amazon. But I was looking at the Chrissy Teigen Dutch oven, but I just didn't get it. And then Allison Roman is so funny because she was on Desus and Mero, and they had her make a chopped cheese sandwich, which is like a New York sandwich staple that you get from bodegas. It's pretty good. It's just like ground beef and cheese, and that's about it. And and bread. It's not bad, but it's a little overhyped, I would say. Just get a fucking burger.
Like, it'll do, and it's probably cheap.
Yeah, and she made it on there. I was like, oh, she's cute, and she seems like she's fun. And then she said all that shit. I was like, God damn it. I can't like enjoy her, you know?
That's the thing that's like crazy to me was like this. How did you not know that was going to rip you apart?
Yeah, that's so weird.
When you're in the media as much, because she has a New York Times recipe, like a once a week recipe, and she has a newsletter that's really popular.
Right.
I'm like, so you've been working in media for the last 10 years. Like, how did you not know that, like, dissing ladies of color was going to give you issues?
Yeah, it's so weird. It's just like, even if you felt like that racism and hate in your heart, it's just like, just don't fucking do it on TV. Hide it.
Yeah, yeah. But she's like the ultimate, like, white lady. She's like made well, that clothing. She like speaks to the woman that shops at Everlane. It's very...
What's Everlane? Very is that white.
It's an online shopping, but they usually do a few items. And it caters to like a white lady demographic, like the ladies that wear white jeans, like that kind of.
All right. Okay. That is very specific.
They're
have a black model.
Like Karens. Yeah.
Oh, okay. I wonder did they do this after the protest? They put a black girl. Damn, it's all black girls on this front page.
That's the funny part. After the protest, I follow all these fashion blogs, and you're like, I noticed that they put a lot more black models, and I'm like, there you go.
So this looks like this to me looks like a lot of pretty black girls in this thing too.
Yeah.
It kind of looks like an LL Bean when that was hot. LL Bean's not that hot anymore.
No.
It's because when they partnered up with, I think, Sears or JCPenney's, they lost some of its luster. Even though they probably make pretty good products, you know, but I just think it's just not as hip. But yeah, okay, this I can see what they're doing.
Yeah.
All right. Like a J. Crew before.
They went bankrupt.
J. Crew went
All these businesses are Sears is bankrupt, JCPenney's is bankrupt.
Yeah. Sears was on its way out for a while. I mean, I used to work at Sears when I was a kid. My dad worked there for a long time.
And it was a great store.
It was. Oh, it was the shit. I mean, I don't know. When you were a kid, did you ever get the Sears Wish Book for Christmas?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
I like going through all the like electronics and then like the cooking stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. I fucking love that. And there was one. God, I want to say. So one of the last times I went out. Well, like earlier this year, I went to see that. Oh, my God. What's the Margot Robbie character? Harley Quinn movie?
Yeah.
And the mall that I go to, the mall where the movie theater is, they have a Sears. And you very seldom see, like, the one closest to me, like, where I got tires at one time, like, that's not there anymore. It's a Stu Leonard's grocery store now.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
It is. It's weird when you see, like, it's kind of, isn't it like a little bit depressing when a corporation doesn't make it?
It's very depressing.
Like, you guys are supposed to be the big ones and you can't even. So like when Blockbuster is taken down, you're like, there's something sad about a corporation that, because once you have your business model down, it's really kind of hard to get knocked out unless you are not innovating.
It is. It's very hard. I mean, like now, you know, people are, you know, everybody's buying stuff online. Even before the pandemic, it was just, there was an Army Surplus store that was in the area and here in Hackensack. And I was just looking for some Long Johns. And I was like, oh, do you have, he's like, yeah, we do. You know, we're about to close in another month because I want to retire. And then like they said, the lady was telling me that kids go into the store. They look at they could be looking at a pea coat. And then they look the pea coat up on Amazon and they just buy it from Amazon and walk out of the store. It's like fucking crazy to me.
Yeah, that's depressing. Yeah. I was trying to do in my neighborhood, buy it. Like if I could buy the stuff, I try to buy it in my neighborhood just to keep these businesses afloat. Because it is like disheartening to know that Amazon really just does annihilate you. They do this thing that you go on a website and if you click over an item, if you have it on your, I have it as a, I think the term is like a widget or something. It has this thing that like once you click over an item, then Amazon will come onto your screen and be like, here it is for cheaper.
Yeah. Wow. That's, yeah, that it's so sad because I guess maybe we can even make this transition into talking about movies a little bit before we talk about your debut album, Voluptuous Boy, in stores on July 21st, tomorrow.
Yes, tomorrow.
Yeah. So I don't know when this is going up, but I mean, it'll be out by the time that you hear this, that everybody hears this. And but so just making this shift, you know, there's this really good documentary that I saw I think I saw it last month called Jasper Mall. And it's about this mall that a mall on the decline in Jasper, Alabama. And it was just about the denizens of the mall. And it was really nice. It was just like kind of like when you think about that Americana. I guess this mall, this mall may have, I think maybe it was open in the 80s. I don't know. But it was open, you know, and it just showed how like all these stores were going away and, you know, like people were, you know, retiring and closing up stores. And it was just, it was sad because, I mean, that's all we knew. And then when you think about like the nostalgia that's attached to it, especially when, what was that season, maybe season 2 or 3 of Stranger Things when they were at that mall? Everything took place at that mall. And it is sad when you go to a mall and not like, and nothing's there. I remember one of the first like big headline and road gigs I did was Thomas Attila Lewis. He had me up there for a gig in the Berkshires, and it was the Berkshire Mall was near, you know, where I was staying. And I went in there and it was definitely like an old school mall. They had a Best Buy, they had a Target. And then the next time I did a gig in that area, like the Best Buy was gone, and then there was just hardly nothing in that mall.
Yeah, it's like when you go to those towns that used to be something during the steel industry times, like Jamestown, New York. You're like, it's sad. It's depressing.
Yeah, there's always been something about me that I've just really liked small town America, even though I'm a kid that grew up in suburban Washington D.C. I used to summer in North Carolina. It's not really summer. I just stayed at my grandmother's house. Yeah, I like saying that shit though. And then making fun of myself for saying the shit. So I used to like that. And you know, like we would go into town. Like we would literally go into Reidsville, North Carolina, which was about 20 minutes from my grandmother's house. She would drive us up. There was a Kmart. And there was a Food Lion. And then if you went to the mall, the strip mall, they had a Belk and they had like an Eckerd and like an arcade. And like that was the shit when you're like 7 or 8 years old. And you go.
Oh, yeah. It was exciting.
And then you go to McDonald's. And then now it's just kind of dead. And it's sad because I guess that's some of your youth that's dying too. Like your youth's already dead, but it's just like,
it's just changing.
Yeah. And those monuments of your childhood aren't there anymore. And it's just like fucking sad. Like I've done quite a few gigs around malls like that and at malls. And it's just like, this is really sad.
Yeah. That you're like, oh no, no more Hot Topic.
Right. No more Hot Topic. No Spencer's. No more Wetzel's Pretzels.
Yeah. All of that. Like, yeah. Even the food court, you're like, those, they don't have as many little restaurants as they used to.
Yeah. But I recommend it. It's really good. It's just like really, it's just kind of like a slice of life. It's, some aspects are kind of depressing, but some are just kind of like, they're like some sweet moments. And it's actually a good movie because it just brings back, you know, it just makes me think about doing like gigs like that, like near those malls and around. And like,
That's how we killed our time.
Yeah. Yeah.
You go to the mall, you eat, and then you just browse around. You're not even like shopping. You're just like looking at stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. And going to the movies, and it's just, It's just a different thing now. It's just, I don't know. It's very depressing because all you doing is just, you go online and you click, and then they send you the thing.
And then sometimes you kind of forget that you bought something.
Yeah. You're like, oh.
Which is always nice when it shows up, but it is kind of weird to be like, it's so weird that I forgot that this is coming in the mail.
Yeah. Now, what have you liked that you've seen the past few months, like movies? You said you just got the Criterion Channel not too long ago.
Yeah. So that one's cool because you get to see like a lot of independent movies, and they mm-hmm. do it as like a bundle with collections from certain filmmakers.
Okay.
And they do it from, it sounds like, from all over the world. So a lot of it, you're just like, I don't even know what I'm looking at, but you just like the poster of it.
Sure.
So you watch it. So Joe and I watched this one that we thought was really, really good. It was called Stranger by the Lake, and it was a French movie.
Okay.
And it's about this guy that there's this lake that's well known for where a lot of gay men hook up.
Nice.
And so it just sets the tone. So you have to get for a lot of very hetero males, you might have a hard time. There's a lot of gay sex.
Okay.
But I think the reason why he sets it up, the director, the filmmaker, is so you get used to this world, because it all portrays here.
Mm.
Like, when you look at it, you're like, this must have been an inexpensive budget because it's shot in one location.
Yeah.
And it's a thriller. So there's a guy there that starts taking out gay men one by one. But it's not like a thriller in that aspect. It's more about the emotional ties between human beings. And like, I don't know. I thought it was a really great movie. And it even created like its own genre, apparently. But it did well at, I think, Cannes.
Okay.
Where it was just considered like I forget what they call it, but it was like a gay thriller, I think is what they called it.
Okay. So it's is it Frank falls in love with Mike Michel? An attractive, yes. Potent, and lethally dangerous man. 2013. Okay.
It was really good. That one was good. And then I watched this German movie that I really liked about this woman that she's Jewish, and her husband isn't, but they live in Berlin, and then he was trying to hide her, or they were trying to hide her, but then they eventually found her, and then she went to the camps. She survived, but her face was damaged a lot, so they did reconstructive surgery, and I think her husband thinks she's dead, so she goes back to the town to meet him, but he doesn't notice her, like he doesn't recognize her. But then she keeps going back to the same bar that he works at. And so he eventually is like, hey, well, you look very similar to my wife. Will you play her? And I will, so I can get the money from her estate, and I'll give you a cut of it. So she goes under the disguise of it. But then there's a twist, and then a reveal. And it's so good, and the storyline was really good, and the acting was really good.
Oh, cool. I got to get into some of that.
Yeah, that one's called Phoenix, and there's a scene at the end that I was like, ooh, how fun. And it got a good review, and then the same filmmaker did another one that was like called Barbara, and that was set in Berlin in the 80s, and she's trying to defect to the other side, to the good – what's the good side? West Germany?
Oh, God, don't do that
to
me. The
Iron Curtain stuff. And so it's kind of like a Casablanca, but set in that time set. Like, so, she has to make some tough decisions.
So Phoenix, 2014, Berlin, 1945. Is she a singer?
Yes.
Okay, all right. Okay, yeah, all right.
Nina Hoth. They consider her the Meryl Streep of Germany. And then I thought the male actor was really cute. And he's in both of those movies as well. Both of those actors are both in Phoenix. And Barbara.
Okay. Good shit. What does Criterion Channel run you? Was that a subscription?
It's a subscription. I think it runs you less than Netflix.
Okay.
But it's still like, I think I want to say around like $7.99 or $9.99.
Oh, that's not bad.
Yeah. It's like, if you want to watch movies that you would never be probably seen on the other services, and then like, it's cool to watch if you're really into filmmakers, you get to watch a whole, they choose some of their best so you can like compare and contrast what you like and dislike.
Yeah. I have a couple Blu-rays and DVDs Criterion editions. Like the last one I bought was Election.
That's a great movie.
That's one of my all-time favorite movies. I happened to be in Barnes. I was in Barnes. Well, it's two big corporations. So I happened to be in Barnes & Noble and I said, what? They got Election Criterion? And then it was cheaper on Amazon. So I just waited, you know, and did that one. And then I have The Ice Storm, which was, have you seen
that? I never saw that one, but I remember reading about it and I was like, this movie seems cool.
It's good. So it was 1997. The movie was set in the 70s when like, it's like the end of the 60s, like the free love and all that shit kind of reverberated that the parents had. It just kind of went into the lives of their kids. And like they were doing weird shit. It wasn't super weird, but it was directed by Ang Lee, and it starred Sigourney
Weaver. That's Brokeback Mountain, right?
Yes, Sigourney Weaver, Kevin Klein, Joan Allen, Tobey Maguire, and newly found Katie Holmes. And that is the main reason why I saw that movie.
Yeah,
because I love Katie Holmes, and so I found out about that, and then found out it was a novel by Rick Moody, which came out, I think, in like 94. And that shit was like, the book was fucking great. And it gave you more depth into the characters and stuff. So that was really good. And I think that I got to have a couple more, but not too many, but maybe in some Wes Anderson movies.
We've revisited some. We did Sideways when we were talking about, was it Thomas Paine?
Yeah.
Yeah, we watched that one. We're like, that's a great movie. Like, some movies are just like,
Alexander Payne. I'm sorry.
Alexander Payne. Thomas Paine. He's the one that wrote those pamphlets, right?
Shit, now you're going to make me look that up.
I don't know.
I know there's Thomas Hayden Church is in the movie.
Yeah, Thomas Hayden Church is great in it.
Sandra Oh. I've only seen that movie once, and I do like it. Alexander Payne... The Election was one of the first DVDs. That's one of the first, like the first batch of DVDs that I bought. That was the first movie that I would just watch that movie and listen to the director's commentary track like over and over, like a fucking nerd.
Yeah. Like, well, because something, you're just so impressed that somebody came out with like a perfect storyline where everything works out together.
Yeah. And that was based on a novel by Tom Perrotta who did the Leftovers was based on his book also. And and it was set in New Jersey, but Alexander Payne set it in Nebraska because that's his hometown. And I love that movie. That's when I really 1998, 1999 was when I started to be like a real nerd about movies. And it's like when you say that, it's just like that's when my passion started to grow. And I'm not going to say like I know all this shit about movies. It's just like I started really loving movies because initially it was for me when I was a kid. It was just like football cards, baseball, basketball cards, video games, sports. And then like when I was like 19, it was like that shift started to go from like, oh, I really love these movies. I'm into acting. And I just like, I'm really like, oh, who directed this? Who was a cinematographer? This actor was in this? And that's like when IMDb came out. So that's, I know a little bit, but the minute you know a little bit about something, you really don't know shit. Like you're telling me these movies on Criterion, that's just like will probably just blow my mind. Like I just have to expose myself to them.
Well, they're just like, the reason, I mean, it sounds so snobby to say this, but like a lot of, and we still, in America, we still do a lot of movies that are great. Just like a great storyline or that's interesting. But
yeah.
A lot of the focus is just like Marvel and what we'll sell at the movie theaters.
Oh, God,
like
yeah.
We've lost like the independent, which probably just ends up going to the streaming services. But like you watch a lot of foreign film and the storylines are just different. Are there a human interest disguised under a sci-fi or something? Like you just get to see different stuff and a different perspective and different storylines that you probably wouldn't see over here. So if you just get bored of American film, I'd say like go check out you know, other countries. Like, I think it started when we watched Parasite, and then we wanted to see what other movies was Bong Joon-ho.
Sure.
I can't remember. I think I just combined two Asian names.
we'll say the Parasite director, so we don't get canceled. Yeah. No, well, I think that's true because, I mean, it seems like they take more risks. And sometimes as an American, you can kind of sound pretentious when you say, oh, I liked this movie, but you really mean it, you know, like because I will even say, you know, like art house movies, like the first time you were on, we talked about Thoroughbreds and like that. I would consider that as an art house movie.
Yeah,
that's something that I would be excited about. I'd have just as much excitement as I would about Tenet. You know what I mean? Like, I would be just as amped to see that, but not that many other people will.
Yeah. You're not going to be able to have a conversation where you're like, hey, did you guys see the new, I think her name's Nicole Hoff was seen her. We watched her film the other day that we thought was really great.
Which one?
The one, it's Catherine Keener. We were like, well, that's a lot. She plays that. She and her husband, played by Oliver Platt, live in an Upper East, Upper West Side apartment, or maybe just in New York, but nice. And they try to find people that are about to die and then take all their furniture and they buy it in bulk really cheap. And then they sell it for an extreme amount of money. And then Catherine Keener plays a New York white lady that has guilt. And so she really makes like these weird, uncomfortable faux pas under the disguise of helping.
Mm. What's it called?
I forgot the name of it.
Is it the Land of Steady Habits?
No. If you put like probably like Catherine Keener and Oliver Platt movie, it'll show up like that. And then the dialogue between it was really funny, and every character, all the actors in it, did a really great job.
I feel like Nicole Holofcener did the first, I think she was at one point going to direct Can You Ever Forgive Me, the Melissa McCarthy movie.
Yeah, that makes sense, actually. Emily Heller's sister is a great director.
I know. She directed me in that.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's great. No, she's three for three. She has not missed all different, all kind of these small stories that she's kind of, she's really good. She's really talented.
Yeah, it's impressive.
I took my parents to go see that, to see me on the big screen.
Yeah.
And, you know, the subject matter of that movie, you know, my parents are pushing 80 and they were laughing. They enjoyed it. You know, two homosexual characters. They're not.
Oh, Richard Grant is great in it.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I thought I'm biased, but I thought that they should have won. You know, they probably should have won Oscars.
Yeah, that storyline was really fascinating.
Yeah. I'm seeing.
I also like movies that open up a world that you've never seen. So that's what I think I liked about Stranger by the Lake, is that I've never seen a movie set straight in a gay hookup area. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so you're just like, and everyone played it grounded, and it was just like normal portrayals. So you get used to the world and then you start maneuvering around it. And then you're like, well, this is fascinating because I would never see this.
Right.
I probably wouldn't ever go, but now I get to see this world. And then I think it's just good to see other people's experiences.
Oh, definitely. Cause it makes, when you're specific like that, when the specificity and you're very specific, it makes it universal. I forget the term
Is it like microcosm or something?
It's like,
I don't know.
It's like when you make you make something universal by having all this specificity, even though something takes place in a foreign country, there's a different religion from you. Is this one movie? What's that movie? It was like, I think it was called like The Affair. It was something about this Islamic or Muslim couple getting a divorce or something. I forget what it was, but it was just like, oh, this guy's like my dad. You know what I mean? Like, it's just like, oh, shit, you know.
Cause
Because sometimes, like, I can be xenophobic to a certain degree where it's like, I don't want to read no subtitles.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and then you're just, and then you start watching it, then you're fucking crying, you know?
Yeah, and you're like, this is, I completely relate to this character.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I love it.
So this movie, you're talking about, are you talking about Please Give?
Yes.
Oh, that was 2010.
Yes.
Oh, I thought you said new.
Oh, no, no, no. Oh,
okay.
If I did, I apologize.
It's all good. No, I did see this, but it's been a while.
No, because Joe and I were talking about that movie while we were watching it. And you're like, isn't it fascinating that the social media or Facebook culture hasn't creeped in yet? Mm. That it was still fairly new, that it wasn't like had to be integrated into the storyline.
Yeah, it's only 10 years old.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where like now a lot of movies, you have to show text messages being displayed because that's a lot of our life is through texting.
I was just watching that movie, that Netflix movie, Desperados, and the one with, what's her name? Pretty girl, Nassim Pedrad and Lamorne Morris. It's like a fun, it's a rom-com.
And, oh, okay, cool.
And when they text and stuff, they're like, oh, you, the graphic flashes up and all that's, you know.
Yeah, it's like,
bloop. Yep. Bloop, bloop, bloop. That's a good bloop. That's pretty good.
Thank you.
You know, you came up on the show a couple weeks ago. I had comedian Justin Brown.
Oh, I love Justin.
Yeah, and we were talking. He was telling me about, you know, his showbiz path, his origin story. And he mentioned you that you were one of the writers on his mod team, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yes. And we were talking about you. I was like, Sarah needs to act more. But I mean,
I would love to.
Yeah, I could see you doing some good shit.
Oh my God, I haven't seen Justin in ages.
Yeah, he hosts a podcast, Medium Popcorn, with Brandon Collins. Yeah, we were just talking about what that was like doing that. What was that experience like for you? Like
loved it.
Yeah.
But it's like after a while it was very money consuming and time consuming.
Yeah.
That by the time I was getting tired of it, my stand up was picking up that I was just making more money doing stand up, that it was getting in the way, and then I just felt bad. And then mod is just like an experience. It's supposed to be like a learning experience. I don't think you should be a lifer at those things. It's like you do it for a few years, you learn your stuff, and then you move on so you make room for other people.
Right, right. Yeah.
We were talking about how UCB, it's so interesting that now, at least the New York side of it, how it's gone pretty much.
Yeah.
And it's an end of an era. It dominated the comedy scene and it was such a pool for talent for so long.
Yeah. It was something about that room, like that at the below Gristiti's, that was just fucking magnetic. I mean, I did one session I did like 101. And I remember performing, it was cool, but then going, you know, you'd have to go see shows and stuff. And it was some energy that was just crazy. And then a couple years later, I did College Humor Live. That was the only thing that I had ever, only time I'd ever done stand up there. And it was just like, I want to fucking, that energy in that room is just insane.
Yeah, it was pretty great. It's just like, I don't know. Doesn't it feel like when you go out and you're enjoying yourself and then your friend's like, let's go here. And then because you move, it just kind of changes the vibe and it deflates the sales. It just felt like when UCB had to move.
Yeah.
And then they got too big. And then I think a lot of people just put so much weight into them as making them their careers. And it's sometimes I feel like it's bad to worship an institution because they have no loyalty towards you. So you really should just like use it for what you can and then meet the people that you like and form friendships with like-minded people or that like to have the same goals as you.
Yeah.
And then take it from there.
Yeah. It's kind of bittersweet because it was kind of funny seeing people tweet tweet like sideways shit about UCB. But at the same time, it was like, it was a place where, at least, especially UCB East for me, was great because I could do Fresh Out, and then I could do, before that, I could do Lasers in the Jungle on Thursday, because I'm like a guy that doesn't, like, I do spots and stuff, but it's just, I was in that before everything was, you know, came, before the pandemic, I was just, like, you know, would do the road on the weekends, do one-nighters and all that stuff, and then to just connect with the city, like Gotham at the late, you know, in the Vintage Lounge, and then but UCB East was like that. You could get some quality stage time, even though they didn't pay you. But
that's all right.
Yeah, you know,
frustrating.
It's very.
Don't do new material. Just fuck around and have fun.
Yeah, it just forced me to just take more risks. And just like, I know if I get this out here, then on Saturday, by the time I'm getting paid on Saturday, I'll feel more comfortable about the new stuff. So I did feel some kind of way about it, but I still miss them not being there. I miss like going to the Lower East Side, East Village area, and just getting up, doing a set, and seeing my friends and shit, you know?
Oh, yeah. Hanging out at the bar for a second. I ran a mic there, and I really enjoyed it for, I think it was about a year. I liked getting pizza next door. And then if that was your only show for the night, I liked walking through the village, East Village, and, like, picking up treats before I went home.
Yeah, yeah. It was it sucks. I mean, and I guess in show business, I mean, we know this for a fact. You've been doing it long enough, and we both have. You longer than me. You see places that you started close. I mean,
yeah, you just don't get attached anymore. Like, I remember when I was really attached to this one club in Houston, and I always had older comics being like, you should branch out because these things never left, and then you're like, whatever. But you're like, it's so true though. You're like, you cannot get attached to anything. Like, you'll try to suck up to the one gatekeeper, and you're like, that person is going to be like, hey, remember that weirdo that we were all like obsessed with, that thought we're upset that they would never give us spots, but like, you're like, they've moved and they don't think anything about you. It's just like really weird how you get obsessed with these certain avenues where you're like, you don't really need to, you can just move about and do your own thing. And
I think the first one for me that hit me the hardest was, well, there's two actually, but the first one was Ochi's Lounge, like Comics closing down.
Yeah, that was really fun.
Yeah. That was like, because I started in 09, so you're probably one or two generations, maybe two.
I moved here to 08, so we were kind of in the same group of like making a name for ourselves.
Okay.
You could start in another place several generations, but you go to New York, you're the same generation with everyone that just moved there.
That's true. But I mean, I ignorantly started in New York just off the rip, just like going to open mics, but that was a special place. And to me, now maybe you can speak on this with a little more authority, but to me, it felt like the whole scene was totally different after that. It was just like a big rift. Like, it was just like, to me, it just seemed like everything changed for me. Cause maybe the second place that I got up, and I would do those Monday night, like the Morrison Motel. And then sometimes somebody would have a Saturday night show, but it would mainly just be those shows.
Oh, yeah. Oshis, or at least Comics, was the first club that I was kind of accepted in, but then it like closed down.
Yeah.
About a month or so later.
It's so crazy. And then like that was just like, that sucked. And then it was just kind of like the wild, wild west after that, at least doing open mics. I'd have to go all the way to, what is that bar? Legion Bar.
Yeah.
The Woodshed. Mike Lawrence used to run it. And I think
I remember that. Yeah.
I think Dan St. Germain did too. But
I was like, I don't know why, but I just stuck to the creek for the longest time.
Okay.
And then I remember Comics being like, you need a branch. You need to branch out.
Yeah. Yeah. Just like do all of them. Just do as many as you can. You can't
just stay at one.
Yeah. And then I think after that, like I would do like coffee houses in Jersey and bomb. Because like it would be, I would do like music open mics. I was okay. Like when I started, I was okay because I was like 29 and I had some experiences and shit. But like to really get my chops, like I remember this place in Newark called Seven Burritos, and it was like a religious burrito place, like a Christian burrito place. I don't know how that worked, but but my buddy had that I kind of befriended. He's a musician, and he would let me go for like 15-20 minutes.
That's amazing.
Yeah, yeah, and it was like really cool because you got to think if you were a singer songwriter, you got to do maybe 3 songs. So he was just like, "Yeah, do 15 minutes." So
that's about 3 songs.
Yeah, yeah, I'd be there like on a Friday night and just working, and I'd get a burrito. You know,
that sounds pretty great.
Yeah, yeah, and the other one that hit me was the Arlington Draft House used to have this room called the Green Room, and it was like where they, and this is in Alexandria, Virginia, Arlington, Virginia.
Yeah.
And you'd have the big main room, obviously, where the big, you know, the headliners would come through and all that stuff. And I would love performing there, but then they had the side room, which was it was a bar, but on Saturday nights at 10:30, they'd have open mics, and the open mic was essentially a real show. It would be like in New York, it would be like a hot show on a Saturday night, like a hot alt room show.
Oh, nice.
And you would just do like, you could do, you know, it was, you could do your time, but you had to be on your shit. It was an open mic, but you wanted to do well.
Yeah. You can't fuck around. That's how like places, rooms like Largo ended up where it was really just like a workout room. And then it ended up becoming like the fun place. And then it was really like a workout room, but then everyone, all of a sudden it became the big deal that you couldn't just show up there with
bullshit
working on stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
You had to kill.
Cause you spent time in LA, right?
I did a year there, when I was maybe 2 years in.
We never talked about your LA year on here.
Yeah. I didn't do well. I was a, alcoholic.
Okay.
Like I think I drank most of the time. And I also, Houston, when you start off in Houston, you think going up once a week is like all you need to do. And mm-hmm. then when you move to these places, I'm not really a mover and a shaker. Like, I don't know how, if I'm going out and if I make friends, it's only because we've been hanging out in the same spot over and over again.
Yeah.
Like I can be kind of shy, or I don't have an outgoing personality. So like now, you know, going out was hard, or asking for spots was hard.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't really make it there. And then I came back, and then I worked on that, and then decided that New York was probably a better fit, or I could get more stage time.
Yeah. Yeah. I liked starting in New York. I mean, cause there was just so many different places to get up, and
yeah.
And I guess I found, like, being from going home to visit my parents, I would hang out with them during the day, run errands for them, and then at night I would just go to the draft house. And that was a feeding ground to, that was like a farm system to open, to like host and feature for the headliners in that, you know, the touring headliners. And I got to work with Chris Hardwick and Marc Maron, like my first, you know, first year or for in within the first 2 years, 2 to 3 years of working there, you know.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
I think starting in New York is great because you can go do Brooklyn shows, and you know, not industry's not really coming out to a lot of those shows in Brooklyn.
They're not.
Where I've heard that not really. I mean, I think you can, you know, bomb in obscurity where it doesn't affect you. Where I've heard in LA, it's like there's always someone there.
Yeah.
So if you eat it, then they remember. It is really frustrating. I'm guilty of that. Of like, I remember the first time I saw Brody Stevens, and I was like, it was at an open mic at Brentwood, mm-hmm. the brewing company. and being like this, I don't get it. And then I saw him in Houston and I thought he was so funny.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's just weird.
Yeah. It's an interesting thing. Like, cause I've talked about this a couple times, but maybe I'll just talk about it with you. Fuck it.
Yeah.
You talk about rooms that become like their workout rooms, and like Phoebe Robinson has a show at Union Hall, and sometimes she'll do it where it's just like Phoebe Robinson and friends, and she'll host and then she'll do a long set at the end or whatever, and she'll have a couple comics come on, and Phoebe was like, yeah, come do my show, it's a workout room. I think I did it twice. And I started doing those shows like in Brooklyn. Like when I started, I was in Brooklyn doing these alt rooms, and I'm doing jokes that some of them ended up on my EP that came out and whatnot. And I'd work them so much and they would do well. And then I get there, they're like, oh, like they're tight or they feel weird. like I'm an asshole. Like, cause you know, like I would even think of myself like, oh, I'm even the stuff that I do that I think is edgy. It's not really edgy. It's just like,
yeah,
I'm just telling a joke. And then they were like, oh, and I was like, hey, come on. And then at one point I was like, Phoebe said this was a workout room. Like, what the fuck, guys?
Yeah, guys, yeah. I was told you guys are acting like this is my make or break moment. Like, this is America's Got Talent.
Yeah. And it's so weird. And I kind of felt worried after that set that I was just like, even though shit was working everywhere else, I felt like, oh, my God, I feel like, am I like a dinosaur? Am I like a dude that's like telling these jokes that aren't not necessarily, it's not like they weren't PC. It was just, I felt weird and kind of sad because, the places that I started out at, they're changing.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I've had that where you're like, am I old?
Yeah.
Yeah, I do. I worry about that. But then you go up and then you're like, it's fine. And you're like, I'm no different than anybody else.
Right. Because it's not like my references are totally fucking wrong. Like I could say a word and then they, you know, like they just want to be tight. And then the comic before me talked about taking a shit. And I'm like, okay, was the comic before me more adorable than me? Yes, it was Aparna, but she was talking about taking a shit and you guys ate it up. But, you know, but so I don't know.
You're like, she's thought provoking. And then you're like, you're some dude that's just talking about taking a shit.
Yeah. So I was just like, oh, my God, I can't believe this.
I know there are double standards. It's weird, but it just happens.
Yeah. And sometimes it's just not your night. And I didn't have.
Yeah.
It's just you can feel it. It's not like you bombed, but you can just like that. Something was off. I was just off and it didn't work. But then I got paid, which was nice. And I went to Whole Foods after that and got some groceries.
Yeah, and you're like, and then I'll watch one of my favorite movies and I'll go to bed and it'll be okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
It was just, it's just one of those things where I just felt like, God, am I, what the fuck? I don't know. Showbiz. Showbiz.
But I get more upset with myself, but the way that I behave about the bomb.
Yeah. Because
the bomb happens.
Right.
But it's how I treat the audience when it happens that makes me upset. Like if I get mad at them, then I'm just like, then they won, and then I should have just acted like this is fun and it's not a big deal and we'll all move on together. Like it was just like one bad date.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I get mad when it's like I do a bit that I want to try and then I'm like, fuck. And now I got to go back to some shit that I don't want to do. I know that works and I want to work tonight. I don't want to just go on autopilot. I want to just work on a little bit of new.
Yeah.
It's just like, oh. And sometimes I just wish I would have said certain things to get to make myself feel better. And, you know, like that. So I'll give you another show. Have you ever done Shtick a Pole in it?
That's the, what's his name? He's from
Dan Goodman,
Philly, right?
And his lovely wife.
Yes. Goodman. I don't think I have, but I know Dan.
It's a really good show. So it's a fun show where you do it at, Drom in the East Village. And it's like you go downstairs and it's like a just you go downstairs and it's like a they have a stage and everything, and they do like you do stand up, and then they have pole dancers, and there's a theme where they, you know, they dance to this theme. Some night, one night it might be Biggie, another night it was like Aerosmith or something like that. And so, you know, you do stand up, you have a comic go up, and then a hot girl dances. And I think, I don't remember what I forget what I said. It's in listeners, it's in the Van Hunt episode where I talked to one of my favorite musicians,
yeah,
Van Hunt. And I was telling him about the story, and he was like, well, did you say, you should have said that to them. You know, like I should have said something with them. I was like, come on, like you guys just watch these hot, scantily clad women. I say this one word or phrase, you get freaked out.
Oh, yeah. I've had that where I'll follow someone like Aaron Berg that mm-hmm. destroys, yeah. and then I'll do a joke that, I don't know, either talking about my anatomy or diarrhea or something,
yeah.
and then they get weirded out, and you're like,
but
what?
But you guys, this dude.
You had no problem with his thing about cocks up your ass. And,
yeah.
Yeah.
But Aaron said. Thankfully, he closed the time I worked with him at the Borgata. I think I might have gone on first or second.
Yeah.
You go on the Borgata, everybody, it's like three comics. You each do 20 minutes. And I think he closed the nights that I worked with him.
Oh, yeah. Anytime I'm on a show, I'm like, why would you have me go on after him for the show benefit?
Yeah.
I'm like, just have him close it. He's like a stronger comic in that he can get the crowd riled up, where I'm like, I build up to him.
Yeah.
I can't go on after him. I can build up to him, but afterwards it's weird if I go up after him.
Right. And then sometimes I'm surprised at the things I get over the fence anyway. There's times yeah. where I get like, oh, I got that over that I wanted to get. Like I always yeah. think about like always like one of my favorite comics, and I'm not afraid to say it because you can't cancel me. I don't have anything to be canceled.
Yeah.
What I like about Louis is the fact that in his prime, where when we all loved him, you know, collectively, some of the material that was kind of dark and edgy, he got over the fence. Because it was something yeah. in his delivery that just kind of got him there. But when you go to see Louis, you're kind of, in any comic, really, you go to see them do that high wire act. And you want to see them go to the edge and then like see how far they could go. That's what I always appreciate about him. And I liked his last special. You know what I mean?
Yeah. He did that like all that pedophile stuff for
SNL.
For SNL.
Yeah.
And when you think about it being on NBC, you're like, that's crazy. But I guess when you reach that level of celebrity, they trust that you're not advocating for that, even though that was pre all the other stuff that came out.
Yeah.
I don't know if he would be able to get away with that now.
Well, I mean, watching his last special, I mean, it's easy to, you know, say, you know, whatever the situation he's in now, it's easy to say blah, 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 and point the finger and, you know, everything. Yeah. Like, do I like those things that he did? It was alleged. I don't like that. But just taking like as the artist, you're just like, okay, there's things that I can learn from. Because I think for me, like my favorite comics, like once I started doing it and being ingrained in it a little more, have been Louis, Burr, and Patrice. And it's almost like and also Maria Bamford. And because of Maria Bamford's like fearlessness and stuff that she talks about, the subject matter, I appreciate about her. But like Louis, Burr, and Patrice, like they're just kind of like heightened versions of themselves. Like there's no real artifice, if you will. Like it's not like I'm doing an act. Yeah, Bill Burr will say yell and all that shit and stuff like that, but he's not really angry. But that is the heightened version of him. So I always like, you know, use those three guys as like, okay, well, what did they do? It's like a lot of thought went behind this bit. Even though it's crass, it may come across as crass. Like, would it, you know, blah, blah, blah. Anyway.
Oh, yeah. Sometimes they'll be like, I like your diarrhea joke. And then my my mindset is like, well, it was really about how insurance companies screw us over.
Yeah, yeah.
It's more about how our medical.
Yeah. Let's talk about you. Let's talk about you, Sarah, a voluptuous boy. You recorded this in, was it March of this year that you recorded?
Yeah, it was March, I think, 8th.
March 8th.
It was like a week before we shut down.
It was, yeah. I remember going to the first show. That was one of the last fun things that I did before everything shut down, was your show.
Yeah, it was wild. I mean, even then, I was like, somebody had left on my wall. They were like, oh, I don't think I'm going to be able to make it. I'm trying to sell your ticket because of COVID. And then I'm like, what? Okay. Also, you didn't have to tell me. You could have just not shown up and I would have been fine. Like, now it bums me out that you're not coming. But it was, I was like, okay. Like, it didn't dawn on me we were going to shut down until, like, it was just like a day-to-day thing.
Yeah.
But now I'm completely grateful that I managed to get my album right at the last minute.
Yeah.
Because I know a few people that were going to shoot their special during this time period and now they can't.
Right.
And then it just, how are you going to get back to doing that? Because they had just finished running it for over and over for almost a year and now you have 5 months.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just, I don't know. So I'm just like happy that I got it under the buzzer.
What was the preparation for it like with what was the prep like for you when you said, from the time you said, I'm recording an album, I want to do an album, until you get to the recording the night that you record?
Well, I think we started planning around October and then we set the date, and then I don't usually headline, so I don't really get to work out 45 minutes to an hour.
Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of daunting, where you're like, well, shit, you know, I want to be in a position where when I do a taping, I don't want to worry about it and I can have everything memorized and I know where everything goes and it's just like second nature, so I can have fun about it instead of being worried. So I had Hilarities knew I was opening for Joe, so they were like, do you want to come in a week or a day early and do a headline the Wednesday night show so you can stretch your legs? And I was like, that's great, and I feel like more clubs should offer that because it's really nice to give features more an opportunity to do headlining shows. And then from there, so I worked out my set list and I knew what it was going to be basically then some of the newer stuff and then jokes that I've been doing for probably the last 3 to 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there, it was about piecing it together where it made sense. So I had broken it down into 2 25-minute sets.
Mm.
That's a way that I felt like was easier to work on.
Yeah.
And memorize. So I would run my sets around town where I had 15 minutes. I would do, I guess, 3 15-minute like that. And then at first I had the second part of my set was going to be my first part, but I thought I noticed that chunk was actually quite a bit dirtier for an album to do in the front.
Okay.
And a little bit more like weirder stuff or weirder thoughts or looser ideas. So I thought I should be tighter up front and cleaner and then be able to do the more like weirder stuff towards the end. Cause that way, you know, you want people to not be like, you know, hear two tracks and they're like, nah. You know, you want them to stick around for the whole thing. So I was like, I'll do it like how most hellers work a set, be a little bit cleaner up top and then close out all your dirtier stuff is towards the end. So I did that. And then
now, was that in Cleveland? Like, did you find doing the dirtier stuff at the top? Did you do that initially in Cleveland? Or was it just like when you were mapping it out, you just made that decision?
When I was mapping it out, and then I had one or two bits that I liked or thought where I had worked 50-50 in mm-hmm. rooms, meaning like I really like it and I think it's funny, but for some reason it doesn't hit a lot of the times. And that's too risky for me to put in an album.
Mm-hmm.
So even up to the last minute, I was like, you know
I think I might have lost you. You might have, Sarah.
Or like recording it,
Sarah. I lost you when you were talking about mapping it out, and then I lost you for about 5 seconds, like 10 seconds.
Oh yeah, so that's the thing where you're just like, what was I talking about? Yeah, it was just so. Yeah, no, I'm trying to like recall.
I was asking you about like when you were mapping it out. You said that you God. Now I'm having a brain fart. You were saying you were like coming up even before the recording, you were kind of apprehensive about putting certain things in.
Oh yeah. So yeah, I had a few jokes that are like one in particular that I was like, this, when it has worked, it's worked so well, but when it doesn't work, it kind of derails my set and mm-hmm. it alienates people. And that's the stuff that was one of the bits that would have gone on towards the end.
Okay.
So I, at the last minute, like 2 days before and at doing it week at the Creek, I just felt like it wasn't hitting. And so I was like, I'll just take it out. Mm-hmm. It's too much of a, like a detour or a weird thing to throw in. And, I'd rather just work on it and come at it at another angle than just thinking that I have to put it on this album and then rush it.
Yeah.
So then, yeah, I did that. And then after, recording it, it was nice to get it done. The first show was the best one because there was more people there.
Yeah, because I told you, I said, I feel like you got it.
I felt good about it. Even yeah. with there was a part where drinks spilled everywhere, like waitress. But I even liked that part.
Did you leave it in?
I think I did because I had a nice rebound for it. Everyone was on my side. And then I felt like it's an experience and you want it to be like you were there. So yeah. I felt like that was a nice moment. And so I kept it in.
Yeah.
I like those moments, like with the imperfections, it's just better. I think.
Right. Yeah. I did remember that now. I didn't get a preview copy, but I did pre-order from, Google
Play. You can stream it on Pandora for free.
I don't have Pandora. I like to buy people's shit.
Oh, well, thank you.
Yeah. It was good. It was really good.
Yeah. And so the second one was like hardly anybody. It was so depressing. And then at the end with it being hardly anybody. And there were two ladies that were kind of yappy that I kind of just threw away my set at the end. But it was enough to do bits that maybe I forgot in the first one mm-hmm. that I could just stick in there into the first recording and then fill it in nicely or whatever, or like put it in a better place. And then I actually enjoyed listening to it afterwards. Not like I enjoyed listening to my set, but I enjoyed the whole process of even editing it.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah. So, and then when it was done, you're like, it actually feels like a whole piece and I was pretty happy. And then it was fun to name it. Yeah, it feels like you're just planning a wedding.
Oh, yeah.
And then it made me regret that I was like, I should have just been doing this the whole time, like working on an album every few years. So it's like a body of work rather than just kind of aimlessly having no goals and stand up. For the longest time, I'm just working a set and pushing things out, but I'm not creating a body of work.
Yeah.
And I think that you should.
Yeah. I mean, well, it's different for everybody. I mean, it's... Some people have been doing it for 20 years and haven't put anything out. Some people, they're 2 years in and they're putting shit out. I mean, there's no real alchemy, but it's like when you feel like you're ready to do it. Yeah. I mean, I've only been doing it for like 11 and I just put that EP out because it was like, I don't want to die and not have something that I did that doesn't have a barcode on it.
Yes.
You know what
I
mean?
And you want a thing that people can share and listen to. And it's a moment of time and it's a piece of work that you worked on. You just want something that will like move on or like carry your name, like your baby or something.
Definitely. I mean and because a lot of times, like, you know, we talked about like, it was like, oh, Sarah, did you get paid? I sound like my parents. Like, did you get paid when you did those gigs?
Yeah.
It's like we're doing it for its intrinsic value. A lot of this stuff, like in entertainment, is stuff that we would do without getting paid. You know what I mean? Like, we would do it for free, but we should be getting paid. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's,
yeah,
that's just kind of how I feel about it. It's not like, because it's like you working on your craft. There's nothing like, I've said this a bunch of times on the show, where one of my favorite things to do is, like, my favorite places where I'm allowed to perform at is at Gotham in the Vintage Lounge at like 12:30 at night, like 12:30 a.m. Just like driving into the city, listening to my music, getting hyped up, not doing shit all day, and then going to do a set like on a Saturday or something, you know, like it's in New York City and we're doing all this cool shit. Like,
yeah.
You know, like, one thing is, like, it's kind of cool to, you know, and a lot of times you can definitely have anxiety and you can feel sad and melancholy about what's been going on this year. But it's also a time to kind of reflect on the accomplishments, you know, like you should be more successful because you have the talent. But at this, yeah, sure. And at the same, you know, I don't have bullshit people on this show, Sarah. And, you know, we should all, I'd like to think that most of the people that we know should be doing more and should be more successful. But this shit isn't always fair, but sometimes
it's hard.
Yeah, it's fucking hard. Like, and I think
it's hard.
And that's why I appreciate you and Adrian on your show for, as dope as you are as comics, you don't sugarcoat shit where he's like, yeah, I need to fucking file for my unemployment, or I need to do this, or I shouldn't have did that gig for however much that gig was that you did in Boston or something. You're like, I don't know if should have did that gig. That was probably not good. You know, just like, that's the real shit that a lot of people don't know. And I think with social media, you know, you talking about that movie, Please Give, and Facebook and all that, it's like everybody thinks that they're a celebrity,
yeah.
You know, with like YouTube and all of that stuff. And it's like, it's hard to grab that attention. But when you're actually doing a craft, and yeah, maybe I'm going to sound like a dick or sound a little hoity-toity, but it is high art, you know?
You work on it. It's not like you just showed up and fucked around. You actually put thought and you placement and think about it, and you have something to say, and you said it in a way that, you know, you work on your word economy. Like, it is.
Right. Yeah. I mean, there is a craft to it. So I think, like, what I'm hopefully we're coming out on the other end of this shit to a certain degree. But I think that's kind of like the lesson that I'm having for myself, where it's just like, you think about the stuff that you have to do in order to do the things that you want to do and enjoy doing. It's like, yeah, I did do the right thing. You know,
yeah.
Are there sacrifices that have been made, or maybe would if I would have just got a government job, maybe would things be different? Would I have more money? Probably. But then I don't know. I don't know if I would be.
Yeah. Would it be,
as happy?
Fulfilling.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Fulfilling. Like, I feel like I am doing a lot of the things, like, I've accomplished on some level, and I don't know. You can comment on this after I say it. A lot of the things that I wanted to do when I was a kid, I've done already.
Yeah.
You know, is it on the level that I would like? No, but I've done it. Like, I fucking did it. What about you? When you were a kid, like, is this the things that you're doing now, is that anything that you dreamed when you were a kid?
Oh yeah. Being like doing a late night.
Mm-hmm.
That was definitely on the plan. And also, like, I did want to just live an artist lifestyle. Basically, when I watched the Janet Jackson Pleasure Principle video, that's the apartment I wanted.
I gotta look that up. That is so random. Okay. No, it's not random. It's so specific. It's so.
Well, I just, like, I would think like that. I would think that I want to be an artist and I want to live in like the loft or warehouse that she lives in.
Yeah. Yeah.
That she does her dance routine in, and you're like, that's my life. I don't know how you get to it. And I don't know what that is, but that's what I want. But I'm living in an apartment. I'm not living in a cool warehouse that she's turned into.
Yeah.
But I remember being like, that place looks cool.
She's got a work bench. She's got a bench, weight bench. That is, yeah. That's a huge fucking, yeah. That's awesome. Yeah, that's the thing. I think sometimes it's easy to talk about, you know, to think about the stuff you don't have. And we all have our ups and downs. Lord knows we do as artists, because I was having that today. And then I'm talking to you. I feel like you put a battery in my back.
Yeah, Sarah. Yeah. I feel better because I was having like an existential breakdown last night.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Of just being like, this is crazy. Mm-hmm. This is so irresponsible.
Just what your life, like they're just the.
Yeah. Being like the artist lifestyle of, but yeah. Then like Joe's like, you're wrapping your ego into monetary.
Yeah.
Rather than like. What I instead of being like, I want to make this amount of money, it should just be like, I'm going to make a video, this video this week,
mm-hmm.
and create and keep creating, rather than being like, how am I supposed to make money? How am I supposed to get my Patreon up?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Fucking showbiz, Sarah.
I know. It's crazy.
What are we going to do? This life that shows us. I don't know, but it's fun.
Yeah, so, it's fun, and things are slowly getting better. And
yeah,
I don't know. I'm doing two spots Saturday, so that's kind of
so
back
where,
to normal.
Where is this going to be? Like, is it going to be like what kind of venue?
QED, and then I run to Brooklyn, and I'm doing a rooftop show there.
Okay.
And I've started taking the subway. I have my mask on. I don't do it a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But if I have to get around, and right now, I don't know, Ubers into the city are kind of expensive. So,
oh, they are?
Yeah, and the trains aren't that busy. So if you just wear your mask, I think it's fine.
Okay. Yeah, I think I got to put my car in the shop on Thursday. So I do. They give you an Uber for free to take you home.
I'm kinda, that's good.
Yeah, I'm kind of like, oh. But
I'm taking an Uber. They have the plastic guard between the driver and the back seat.
Oh, okay.
Or I just keep the windows open, and then I leave my mask on.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I'm kind of apprehensive.
Okay. But,
yeah. Well, plug everything. Plug Voluptuous Boy will be out. It's basically out now as we're
– Yeah.
It's coming out. It's going to go number one on the charts.
I tune on the charts for about 5 minutes before someone like Jim Gaffigan knocks it out.
Sure.
And then follow me on Instagram or Twitter. Same handle, STOLLEMACHE.
Okay. And Vag?
Vag Podcast. That's on Instagram. And you usually see it if I retweet it. So
sure.
If you can't find it, follow me and you'll see it.
Great. Sarah, this has been fucking awesome. Always a
it's
pleasure.
Great. Thank you. I feel better. Thanks. That
you,
was
well,
fun.
You made me feel better. okay. Yeah, because
service to each other.
Because I was like, what the fuck? And I was like, I literally logged out. I was supposed to log off at 3. I logged off at like 4:15. I was like, fuck this. And then I was like, yeah. Like, at least I get to talk to Sarah.
Yeah, it was all good. It's good.
Yeah.
Let's create.
Yeah. All right, hold on to the line. Sarah, thank you so much for doing it. Everybody, thanks so much for listening. And we will talk to you next time. Peace.
All right. Bye, Chris.